Mr. Galley, reel 8. On this enormously long walk, had you any notion just how many miles you did at the end of the day?
No. We went through all the villages and towns.
Were these in the centre of France? Or
Well,
Well, where were you sleeping?
We stopped this night in an orchard, an apple orchard, and it simply belted down. And we had the old cape on. I've never been so fed up in my life. Sober, blue, hungry, unwashed, unshaved. So, we stopped the night there in the orchard. The next morning, we told it to dry out. We took them there the next 24 hours. So, during that time, drying out, I found myself, I've always been a nosy boy, and nosy around, so I picked the rifle up and I did wander around. I saw a little farmhouse. So anyway, I went on down, got to this farmhouse, went quietly around it, and I looked through the windows. Nobody in. Went down, tried the door, open. So I said, in the bedroom, the only small house was this magnificent four quarter. So I thought, great, I'm sitting here with a knife. So I went back, I said to George, I'm going to sleep in his orchard tonight, George. He said, well, you know, I said, I found a beautiful little resting place. I said, what about it? If you get caught, I said, you will get caught. It doesn't make any difference. I said, you just walk around and never be pleased. And still, it was there. I said, well, we're supposed to be handed over to the German door. I do not know. Do you know? Well, I said, let's have a good kick to a night kid. And I asked Billy yesterday. Billy said, no, I'll stop here. Well, I said, look, Billy, if anything happens to you, come down to the corner. Let me enjoy you. Started raining again. Oh, just like a monster. So I said, right, George, I'm off. So where we went, and I heard this four post again, boots and everything, and I woke up. I have never changed so many bodies in my life. I was buried under bodies. I bet there were about another six or seven. I'm a woke. We thought I woke up like, as I woke up with a mate, and we swept all the rest, and the way he looked, I said, what the hell is that anyway? And his voice said, who is that? I said, it's Gallagher. What the hell are you doing here? I said, well, I may ask you a question. He said, what are you doing here? He said, I'm here for a bloody good night's sleep. That's what I'm here for. He said, you never told me. I said, I didn't tell anybody. I got it myself. And a good few was to found it after, the room was full.
And the chap, this was Hanmer, was it?
No. The chap that said it was a young lieutenant called John Kelly, who later became Lieutenant Colonel And John Kelly and I became, from that year, the greatest of friends. Friends with the family, a warden and everything after the war. That was the beginning of one of the best friendships I had. I met a lot of officers who were just not on this command. This was a gentleman, as you see, a gentleman and scholar. One of the best friends I was ever to meet. That was the first year that we met. We met on that day. But a lot more was to follow after that.
How did they get food to you? I know you said you were hungry, but there must have been some feeding along the way.
We were talking about them, remember. We were picking apples and anything that we would get a hold of. And finally, we arrived back at Cherbourg after our sleep a fortnight. I think we were on the road for about a fortnight. Where are we been? We must have walked from one end of France to the other. And if you've ever been in France, then you see the lanes are all straight with the poplars on each side. And you look along the road and it seems you're on the road to eternity. You never seem to reach the other end. How many hundreds of miles we walk, I do not know.
No German planes appear?
Oh, we saw plenty of planes in one thing and another. We remember attacked two or three times. We got off the road just in case, but we were never attacked. I heard the story of the lost region. This was a true lost region. What were we supposed to do? What we were supposed to achieve? I don't know, except walk. And we arrived back at Sherwood.
What were your spirits like by now?
Everybody was up to that. As I said, after two or three days before the judge, I said, Germans are coming tomorrow. I said, my hands go. I said, I would have found a shell. I've never been to see the head of my life. Just so, weary, no sleep, hungry, no haircuts, no shears, the danger. We must have looked at the present sight. Anyhow, when we got to Sherbrooke, there was a boat, and if I remember, it was the Royal Dapperdeer, which was sunk there. Because Gunther was being evacuated then, we were still walking around France. And we boarded this ship, and came back to Weymouth, in England. And when we got back to Weymouth, of course, the British expedition board had been back by then, I think we were a few years after then. There was great food, there was everything for us. You know, people were coming here, they were going to find a job, but there we were. We come back from France and people appreciated. We'd gone out to do a bit, we never did anything. But wander around. I often wondered if the war office knew we were there. But I honestly think we could have still been walking, yes. And nobody would have ever known a thing about it.
Did you not get the usual rumours flying through the column about you going here, or going there, or going to do this?
Everybody was saying, what are we doing? Where are we going? So, I mean, if somebody had said, the British are evacuating at Dunkirk, we're going to walk to Cherbourg, and we're going to get off at Cherbourg. You know some objective, you have something to try for, you know. But everybody was just sick, you know, threatened by officers, if they sat down, threatened by officers for throwing the kid away. And what was the object of the exercise? We finally arrived, as I say, finally arrived at Cherbourg. Having walked for a fortnight, how are we going to support the BDF or anything like that? No. And of course, when we got to Cherbourg, it was a hard activity. We load anybody to get on with getting on, very quick to get on.
And you weren't under any attacks at Cherbourg, were you?
No. Well, as a VP, the powers that be were keeping it quiet and said, well, if we don't tell them anything, we can't get any rumours. We'll direct these people to Cherbourg. Because we thought at first when we set up that we were going up to the front, you know. But we walked along in a concrete circle.
And you never found out even later what you were doing there?
Never to this year. I've never found out what we were doing to this year. We were supposed to be reinforcing the 2nd Battalion then. And we wandered around, I think it was Northern France, is it well Northern France? We wandered around Northern France like lost tools, never to see them again. Playing at silly war games, as silly obvious. The only good thing I got about it was that I met Sean then. That's where I was going to shoot. She had all the father.
You must have realised that things were pretty desperate so far as the war was concerned.
Oh, yes. It's all French bloke that told me about France. Sir Henry. Nobody would believe me. I tried to tell them this. Well, there's nothing more. What are we doing here, like, you know? But it was absolutely insane.
Where did you go to after you'd landed back in England?
Well, that was Weymouth, and we straight on a train from there to Britain. Inside Newcastle. Went to there. I was in a place called Stella Maris Hall in Britain. And there were loads and loads of private soldiers sitting with boots, and you had to go up and say who you were, give your number, your regiment. Then what happened then was a general shout out. You know, the Green Howard was sent to warn players, and different regiments. Nothing was Jubilees or Staffordshire or whatever you were in, they were segregated. And the JLI people were put together. Well, and we were there, oh, we were given leave. And I'll get an interesting story about the leave. Nobody, when we first got there, had to be out of the area. It was forbidden to leave the area until it all been collected and sorted out in a different way. So once again, a little bit of weather itself, we said, oh, I said this. I said, I'm going home to tell you what I'm talking about. Because all the news had broken in and what was happening in the district, the different ways of doing the evacuation. And it all being done then, this was well into May, you know. So there was a crossing in Britain, which is going to be in the middle of the crossing of the gate zone. And on there were 4 military policemen, 2 on each side, which would stop anybody getting out. On the first or second night I was in Britain, this couple invited me and George for something. He took us in and gave us our supper. He said, what are you doing tomorrow? I said, you know, nothing. Why don't you come down to the workman's club? I said, fair enough. So we went down to the workman's club. And he said, is there anything you want to do? You know, I want to do any washing. I said, well, there's the only one thing I would like to do. I said, is to get out of Blaine. He said, what for? Well, I said, all right, you go home and let me call them, well, and George let me call them, and I know that we've got some plans. Because I said, at the moment, as far as they know, we're just missing. So I said, but wait a minute. We went to custody when we got these two brothers, and he introduced them, and he said, this is Mr. Churchill. Yeah, the radio and wireless shop. I said, well, what's that got to do with me? Well, he says, the Cossack radios come in these cardboard boxes. He says he can get inside the cardboard box in one, and George Muller, you put him on his front lawn and you take him in your castle. I said, that's a good idea. I'd like to. I said, all we need to do is get past the gates. So we get the cardboard boxes on the flat truck. And away we go. I got the new cattle. And the bus stop, I told him, I said, Warwick Street, the number 12, that was the bus that used to go from Newcastle to Hetton. I said, if you get me to Warwick Street, I'm set. So we drove us to the top of Warwick Street. And as we got out the cardboard boxes, there's a red cap up the other side. But at the same time, the number 12 bus was coming out of Warwick Street and the conductor was stopping on the back. And he shouts, run! And we run after the bus, the red cops were running after us. And George May grabbed the pole, bus conductor gets a hold of my hand, pulled me on the bus, and we made it. And we left him behind. So, I came home. Got off at the cemetery where I used to live at Peyton Regent Street, I think he went. This was on a Sunday morning. And I walked in the back gate, still unshaven, my hair long like the old one were in there. My mother was standing in the back kitchen, mixing the Yorkshire pudding, and I knocked on the window. And she threw the Yorkshire pudding in my head. She says, it's a rabbit. Up went the Yorkshire pudding, the dishes all over the place. My dad come out, couldn't believe it. And that was my return from France. So he says, look at that state you were in. We were filthy, absolutely scruffy. And a friend I had, Matty Brown, his wife used to cook there. She, mother went around for her, and she came along, and I sat on the chair. I said, make me my sugar dinner. They made me sugar dinner. She cut me hair, tied me up. I hadn't long been made, and George Moyes and his father came up. And his father was worried. I said, it's all right getting out, how are you going to get back? Well, I said, the best thing to do is to walk back. I said, the most we'll get is 7 years. So, I think it was on the Monday, we went back on the Monday morning. Got off beside the end. We had to, because the blood was blocked. Walked up. Of course, straight into the hands of the red cap. Showed him what we'd be. He said, well, he's coming back. All right. So he said, we said, I'll have to report it that the blood could be commander. We are like, so we go to the company commander. And we get 7 days apiece. A good lecture. With 2 days pancreas. That's full equipment running about. The first day, we go out, and this sergeant has given us pancreas. We have everything on, double marching and running up and down the street. The women came out. The women were going to tap us. Leave them poor bars of being wicked. Young green boy. That was the end of it. We stopped. All we had to do was send the agent. He said, there'll be trouble here if you treat them bars the way you're treating them. Because, I mean, we really were young. You know, when you look at photos, we were boy soldiers. And all this equipment off, and they absolutely raised Cain. And they were going to have a go at the sergeant, the women. Let them throw bags at me. Anyway, he couldn't carry on. He marches back. The sergeant made the time with a fellow called Douglas Bailey. Douglas Bailey, he was like in charge of it. Called Douglas because he was just clever and everything. When he was talking, he was slapping on him. So he said, you'll carry out your confined to barracks. Anyway, we did the 7 day stop and then we went out at night. I mean, there's nobody to look after you. There was not a police and nobody.
Confined to barracks, what did that mean? other than being tied into bikes.
You're not allowed to go out at night.
Fatigues, were you doing?
No fatigues, like feeling fatigues. Why we did the fatigues not during the day? Well, at night everybody else wanted to go out, there was nobody there, so we went out as well. It was really more of a mark on your car than anything else. You know, well, you didn't do anything with it. Never bothered.
What was the spirit and morale of the civilians like? I mean, Dunkirk had it just occurred.
Yeah. Well, things were bright, and I think we just accepted it was one of these things. One of these things.
Was there defeatism about? Were people defeated?
No. People were pretty proud and people were pretty loyal. There wasn't any defeat that's happened to. It was a setback. You know, the old British setback of when you get beat 4-0 at football or something like that. Well, just a setback. Everybody was smiled everywhere around. People were nice to you, good to you. But the situation towards the forces have changed then. People, the respect for the forces changed. You were more important than what you did. Before you were just a grown woman down the street with a dark uniform. But now you were somebody did not look at you, but somebody respect. Respect for the uniform was greater than it should. You know, it's this guy's in the forces and He's doing his bit right, you know. I think there's a lot more respect after that. To be the secretary then, I can't do anything. I think you've got to do it right away. Let's go back and go, really knows or something like that.
You must have been badly off for equipment and weapons at this point in time.
Oh, well, we still have the same old rifle. I still haven't seen anything that was sort of going to threaten Germany.
Had you been able to retain your rifles after landing from Cherbourg?
Yeah.
They hadn't took them off you?
No, I still had them. I still had mine. The same one I got at Brunswick Castle. Still carting around.
So what did they do with you whilst you were at Blaine? And
nothing. We just had to sat about, took out the lodges, met the girls, went to parties, sweet parties, what were we given? It was like threat like conquer, and here he was, when he could really chase out of the rest. That's what I the attitude wasn't one of defeat at all. It was just something, that's a setback, so, you know, we'll put things right the next time.
But you weren't training, you were just sitting around?
Sitting around.
And how long did this last?
I think about a fortnight. It lasted about 14 days and then we, as I say, they spent a lot of time sorting people out who had been reported missing and people that were also different regiments into different groups. And then came the day when they started shipping everybody out back to their own regiments. And that was when I went to Huddersfield, to Armitage House, to join the remnants of the 2nd Battalion, the DLI.
Were your friends with you?
Yes. Not, no. George, he got himself lost in France. They asked for volunteers. But the dry ambulances. No, it wasn't George. No, it was the other one. Jimmy Jackson. That was it. That's the one they used to drive ambulances.
This was in France.
Yeah. And he used to drive ambulances. This is another friend of ours. And he never was a good map reader. He could always get lost. And there'd been a lot of wounded left, and he had to go to this village, people were going to go, Jimmy had gone to the wrong village. And when he drove in, it was infested with sparrows. So he went in one end at 5 miles an hour and came out the other at about 90 miles an hour with a German sparrow. And I didn't hear this story for a long while because he eventually went to one of the battalions in the 50th year. He hadn't come back with it.
But you went to Huddersfield.
Yeah.
What was the reception like there when you got there?
Well, we never met anybody. The 2nd Battalion had been pretty well annihilated. And, we went there, the names were called out, and I was posted to the A Company. Number 1 platoon, there wasn't really much welcome at all, you know, all the usual meal when you got there and told where you would be bivouacked or where you'd be, I just forget about it because you weren't there very long. And I was assigned to number 1 platoon.
Who was commanding?
My company commander then was a Captain Hungert. My platoon commander was Sean Kelly, who recognised me as a bed mate as soon as he saw me. And he did ask me, he said, to be his batman, as soon as I met him, I said, no, I didn't think I'm cut out for that sort of thing. So he said, well, I'd like you to be my batman. I said, no, I think I'll struggle with the platoon. So that was the first job I'd been offered, on joining the 2nd Battalion as a batman, I said, no, I'll just stay in the platoon. And it was more of a holding thing at Huddersfield, like a reorganisation of the battalion.
The spirits must have been pretty low of those that had survived.
Yeah.
They had a pretty rough time.
They've had a pretty rough time. Especially on the river, I think it was the River Dyle.
Were they telling you about what had happened to them?
They're telling me about the River Dyle. A lot of them had swum across there, I think. I know what the river was. I never really got the true story from them, because I was more involved with the people that I was with.
But they had a VC there, hadn't they?
Jake. Well, I knew Jake.
Hammond.
Jake Hammond, VC, yeah. He was a wheelbarrow VC. He'd wheel his batman in the wheelbarrow.
And the first British Army VC of the war.
That's right.
Was he still with the battalion then?
He was still with the battalion, yes. I think he was with the battalion as far as Brillingham, which was later on.
I think his hearing had been badly affected by the action that he was in.
Yes, he was deaf, very deaf. But he still carried on shooting. He was still with the battalion. I think the battalion commander was Colonel Vieira, or he had a battalion. And what was it called? What was it? Well, we used to regulate the 2nd Battalion. Because the 2nd Battalion was really comes from all three regular soldiers. I think I get the name of the time that I went to. The corporal that we had was there come back, was there, and was in the 6th Battalion. We had Hughie Thomas, Corporal, and a Corporal Johnson. They were the two corporals. They wore the back. This is the back stripe, not the back stripe.